Cheerscast is part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Oh, boy, my Aunt Edna's killer fudge brownies.
Oh, killers, eh?
Yeah, they're called that because the first time my Uncle Ford ever smelled them baking, he came running in from the field and got hit by a combine. He hung on for a few days. At the end, he was just praying to die. Well, eat up, everybody. You want to go where everybody knows your name.
Hello and welcome back to Cheerscast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and joining me for Season 7, Episode 6 is returning guest, the host of Pop Culture Affidavit. Please welcome back Tom Panneries. What's up, Tom?
Not much. How are you?
I'm good. Good to have you back on the show talking about another very funny episode. You ready to get into this one?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Like I said, this is Season 7, Episode 6. Norm, is that you? I'm not sure if that's how it's supposed to be inflected, but I gave it a shot. This one is written by Sherry Aiken and Bill Steinkellner, directed by James Burrows, and the original air date was Thursday, December 8th, 1988. Frasier and Lilith hire Norm to repaint their house while they negotiate with a snobby, pretentious interior decorator. It turns out, though, that Norm's eye for rearranging and decorating is much more to the Crane's liking, and he's cheap. They're so happy with Norm's work that they recommend him to a young yuppie couple, the Coopermans, who are initially repulsed by the way Norm presents himself. Knowing what kind of clients they are and what kind of decorator they prefer, Norm convinces the Coopermans that he's a trendy gay designer. Doubly impressed with his work, the Coopermans meet Norm at Cheers to offer him a much bigger and more lucrative job, and try to set him up with another man. Norm tells them that he's already in a committed relationship, to Sam. He tries to get Sam to play along, but Sam laughingly refuses to indulge in the fantasy that he is anything but a ladies' man. Norm is forced to admit to the couple that he's actually a straight interior decorator. The Coopermans are offended that he lied to them, but they retain his services when he offers to slash his price in half. Returning to the bar, Sam, Cliff, and the rest of the gang are disappointed that Norm kept such an important secret from them. Not that he's gay, or straight, but that he's a decorator and he can get furniture at discount. All right, Tom, what did you think about this episode?
I requested this one, if I recall correctly, because this was one of the more memorable ones, and I've always thought this was one of the funnier ones from the Curse of the Alley era. I've always liked this episode. So, and I you know what, it held up more than I think I thought it would, because sometimes you think about episodes that you loved when you were younger on shows like this or other sitcoms from this era, and you watch them again and like, you know, the jokes don't land as well, or they're cringy in some way or another. But no, this held up really, really well, and I was laughing quite a bit.
Yeah, because during the first season there was an episode sort of about homophobia. Well, not sort of. It was very much about homophobia and gay panic and sort of that thing, and the way that the bar reacted when they thought it might become a gay bar, that Sam had a gay friend from his baseball days. The joke was not about the gays. The joke was about the bar's reaction and kind of their overreaction and their fear and their hypocrisy, and really kind of put the finger on like how bad they looked for the way that they were behaving. But I remember as we get closer to the 90s, I'm like, my memory is that there are some more jokes where, you know, they're a little bit more punching down sort of at gays and gay culture type of jokes here. And I sort of remember that about this one. I was like, I don't know how this one is going to work out. But by the end of it, I was actually pleasantly surprised by the way this turned, because I didn't remember exactly how it turned out. But I was really happy with the ending of it, and we'll come back to that as we get into it. But we'll go through our notes. But like, this is a really good Norm episode. Also, like for although he kind of is only in it for the first half, a really good Frasier episode. And I want to get into the point like where it's really funny to see Frasier and Norm have a scene together that's not in the bar, because like, could not be two more dynamically opposed people characters, and yet there's just something that's like, Yeah, at this point, they've been friends for 4 years. Like, it's not going to be an issue. So.
Yeah, that's right. I can't think of an end. And they, granted, they hired him.
Mm-hmm.
To your point earlier, this is almost satire using the reversal method of the homophobia. You know, the idea that
we get to that at the end. Which I thought was funny. Getting into the episode proper, the teaser is one of those very, very short, very sweet ones. There's always a phone involved, and this time it's Carla. We're getting her one side of the conversations. She's talking to her husband, Eddie, and she's kind of exasperated, trying to help Eddie find something in the house. She's like, check under the bed, check the closet, all these things. And she slams the phone. She's like, sometimes I think that guy would lose his head, you know, if it wasn't attached. And Cliffy's like, what's going on? He's like, he wanted to take the kids for a walk. And Carla's like, oh, Eddie can't find his shoes? And Carla's like, no, he can't find the twins.
you know that's coming.
It is,
it's
yes.
It's like a Henny Youngman joke or something,
exactly.
Right? It's a really old type of joke. Like Henny Youngman or even Rodney Dangerfield or some old comedian. And I think only Rhea Perlman of the cast members could really do that joke the way it needs to be done. Because it's just... She knows we're expecting that. She just delivers it, and she knows that right after that you're going into the opening credits. So it is a really, really funny, just short bit.
Great, great moment, yeah. After the credits, Rebecca comes in, bumps into a guy at the door, and he is overly apologetic about bumping into her, and very friendly and very personal, also very handsome and easy on the eyes, and she's taken with him. She's kind of giving him some looks. Except he then commits the faux pas of faux pas, like worst thing in the world you can do. He asks her when her baby is due, and she's like, I'm not pregnant. He's like, oh, then I really am sorry. And he slinks off. And then she goes to Sam and she asks if the outfit makes her look pregnant. And he's like, well, look around. He's like, yeah, sure. Blame it on the outfit. And this is one of those lines that I have, like, in different contexts I have used before. Like, somebody's like, does this outfit, like, look weird or something like that? Or is it, like, too this much? I was like, sure, blame the clothes. That's the problem. Blame the outfit.
I had to look up if she was pregnant, because I knew she was married to Parker Stevenson at this time, and I couldn't – I know that she did get pregnant at one point, and then I think she lost the baby, and she – adopted. Yeah, because so I was wondering if this was like a joke because she was starting the show and it was one of your classic ways to hide the pregnancy on the sitcom, but
right. But
no, it was just the shirt she was wearing was just a, you know, an unfortunate choice. But no, that line is pretty funny.
We see Norm at his side of the beer wearing his white t-shirt and white pants, like coveralls and everything, with his painter outfit, and he finishes his beer and uncharacteristically foregoes another one when Woody offers, because he has to get back to finish painting Fraser and Lilith's place. And he says that, you know, this is his first job that anyone has given him in 4 months. He doesn't want to do anything to lose it. He's really making the effort to be an honest and dependable worker. And he heads to the door, and Woody's like, Dad, see you, Mr. Peterson. And Norm is like outside and comes back in. He's like, what did you say? He's like, I just said see ya. And he's like, damn it, Woody, now you made me late. He's like, as long as I'm late, I'll have another beer. He's like, it's like, again, this is one of those things where, like, once he comes back in, you know where this is going. Like, once he pops his head back in, it's like, he's not leaving. He's doing this.
Yeah.
But it's such a silly, forced excuse. It's, you made me late. Okay, twist my arm. I guess I'll have another beer.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, then we cut back to Fraser and Lilith's home. This is during the era Lilith has her hair down, her curlies. And
oh, yeah.
She looks so good.
And 80s, Norm, yeah. 80s BB Newirth, man. Whew.
Norm is painting in the background, and Fraser and Lilith watch Yvonne, their decorator, and I wrote down that Yvonne is played by BJ Turner. He only had 20 credits, which are mostly like TV and some campy horror stuff, because then he died in 1993, so just a couple of years after this.
Mm-hmm. Spelled like Ivan, by the way.
Right. Yeah. He's just kind of like going through their stuff, taking photos off the wall and just throwing them in the trash. And like, well, it's like, why clutter a home with mementos? And there's a great moment. He has this precious line where he's like, "Did I tell you last night I programmed myself to dream about your space?" And there's a moment because Norm is just in the background in like the bay, like painting or spackling the wall. And Frasier looks back at Norm and they give each other a look that's not eye rolling, but basically that equivalent. And it's just such a, I was like, that's a special little moment between two characters that you never see together. They just never have any interaction except when they're sitting at the, like the only time they're ever in like that much agreement is when Cliff is the object of their
derision.
But here it's just like they're both thinking, like Frasier's like, yeah, even for me, this guy is pretentious and impossible.
By the way, Yvonne, now's the time on Sprockets when we dance, because that's exactly what I was thinking of.
So Yvonne wants to knock down a wall and convert their kitchen into an atrium. And Lilith is like, I love this idea. I adore it. But what about eating? And he's like, I design, I don't eat. And then he wants to knock down another wall and like raise the ceiling to create a natural light coming in from the
skylight.
Yeah, skylight and everything. And Norm is kind of like looking up like, what is he talking about? And Frasier kind of points up to the ceiling. He's like, but that's our bedroom. And this guy's like, is that all you people think about, eating and sleeping? And then he picks up a vase off the table. And he's like, tell me this was a gift. Like, just every little thing this guy does. It's like, it's impossible. And Frasier and Lilith, they, you know, confer together. It's like, how do you feel about Yvonne? Frasier goes through his whole little litany. He's the most famous designer in the city. He's won tons of awards. He's been written up in magazines. It's like, I would like to beat the crap out of him. So they agree to fire Frasier, and Lilith is about to walk over there, and Frasier stops her. He's like, at the risk of sounding sexist, this is man's work. He's like, feel free to leave the room, because this might get ugly. Or this might get unpleasant, he says. And he walks over. He's like, sir, you're too good for us. It's just the turn that he has. And then he agrees to pay him 6 months severance, and he's talking about all the recommendations and how, like, their poor, meager lives would just be, like, put to shame by his designs and everything like that. As this guy's just kind of storming off, and Will is like, I hope he can recover from that tongue lashing, dear.
Her delivery.
I mean, you can't say enough about it. The reason Rhea Perlman stopped winning the Best Supporting Actress award was because they started giving it to Bebe Neuwirth. So that's kind of like,
yeah.
So she mentioned they don't have enough money now to pay a new designer. And Frasier's like, well, I believe that we have enough taste and intelligence to do it ourselves sans outside help, he phrases it. And she goes, bite me, I love you. And they take a look around for a few seconds, and then he's like, I take back my bite, we suck. They can't, they have no idea. And then Norm, of course, just moves a chair. He just moves a chair so he has a better walking access or something like that. And Lilith, like, falls over him. She's like, that is so much better. You've created a nice little intimate talking space and everything. And then Norm just, he's like, yeah, now I can spackle this wall. And then before long, he just kind of goes into this whole thing where he's like, yeah, if you want this like little intimate like conversational space, he's like, move these chairs here, Frasier helped me move this couch over here, he's like, put the piano in the bay, and he's like going through these whole things, and like he's just talking about how they're redecorating. He's like, splash some paisley around. He uses the word chinoiserie, which I actually had to look up. It's like decorative style or furniture that's meant to evoke Asia, like Southeast Asia or the Orient or that type of like style and everything like that. So, but he's like, chinoiserie. I'm like, how does Norm know the word chinoiserie? I don't know the word chinoiserie. I had to look that. But yeah, and then he kind of like goes through that whole thing, and they just look at him like, bite us, Norm. We love you. And then we cut back to the bar, and we get what is one of my all-time favorite Woody moments.
I know which one you're
this,
talking about.
Yeah, this moment, because this was in the 200th episode.
Yes, okay. Yes,
and I listened to this so I listened to this so often that I memorized it. And he's opening up a package, a care package from home, And he's so excited. He's like, my Aunt Edna's killer fudge brownies. And they're like, wow, killers, that sounds great. And he goes, they're called that because the first time my Uncle Ford ever smelled them baking, he came running in from the fields and got hit by a combine. And the guys are about to eat, and they just stop and look at him. And he's just, what, he's just like staring into the middle distance. And he's like, he hung on for a few days. At the end, he was just praying to die. Well, eat up, everybody. He takes a big bite of the brownie, and they all just kind of look at each other like, all right, and they just start chewing down. Of all of Woody's like little Hanover, Indiana anecdotes and everything, that just, that remains one of my favorites.
At the end, he was just praying to die.
And actually, there's another one later on in this episode that I forgot about, but we'll come to that in a minute. So Rebecca comes in and Sam offers her a brownie, but then withholds it, and he makes a joke. He's like, I'm sorry, a moment on the lips, a lifetime on the hips. And she, like, scoffs, like, walks away from him, just, like, ticked off. And Cliff is like, really, I don't see why you're so concerned about your figure. And he goes on this whole thing. He's like, in the Renaissance time, full-figured women were revered. It's true. Artists would only paint big, voluptuous women. And then he says, that's how they got rid of a lot of their old paint. And I never remembered, like, I knew the Woody gag. I had that memorized, mm-hmm. And I knew beforehand. I was like, that is going to be my home run for this episode. But when I rewatched it, when Cliff says, that's how they got rid of a lot of their old paint, I, like, burst out laughing. I never remembered that line, but it's so funny.
And he does it so matter-of-factly. Yeah. Like, Ratzenberger doesn't do it as if he's making a joke. He's just doing it as Cliff's just telling. It's like, yeah. He never intended to insult her, and that makes it even funnier.
Then Carla sidles up with a riddle. What weighs more, a pound of Cliff's brain or a pound of dead flies? And Woody's like, it's a trick question. A pound is a pound. They both weigh the same. Ask me another Mr. Clavin's brain question, which will lead into almost like the C-plot of the episode. But Frasier and Lilith come in praising Norm's redecoration, which he is anxiously trying to hide from the rest of the bar. Doesn't want them. He's like, you think I want these people to know I'm an interior decorator? He's like, and Lilith says, like, we simply cannot moderate our approbation. He's like, well, give it a shot. He's like, yeah, the dialogue in this and the way they all talk, like the range from the very erudite Frasier, Lilith, Diane type of characters to the basic Norman Carla type.
Yeah.
He says something like, more like, if this interior decorating like gets around, it could eat into my reputation as a lazy beer guzzling lump of mashed potatoes. So they know this other young couple that needs a decorator. They're willing to pay double, and they're the essence of the Y word. Frasier explains that the yuppie word for yuppie. As soon as these two come in, the Coopermans, and the couple is played, Robert Cooperman is played by George Del Hoyo, who had a lot of like TV stuff. And actually, he was in 3 episodes of Frasier playing Father Mike. But fans of the Fire and Water Network might know he was the voice of Dr. Fate in Superman the Animated Series.
Interesting.
Yeah. His wife, Kim Cooperman, played by Jane Sibbett, she was in a lot of stuff. She was in Friends. From around this era, around this time, or like the early 90s, I knew her from the show Herman's Head. Did you ever watch
Herman's
that?
Herman's Head.
Yeah.
She was Hedy, the blonde, the love interest for like his rival / love interest on the show.
Right. Right.
Yeah, and then she was Carol Ross's ex-wife.
Yep. So when this couple walks in, the husband, Robert, is like, sorry we're late. We couldn't decide whether to take the Range Rover or the BMW. And he's like, well, don't keep us in suspense. And he's like, the Beamer. And he's like, the way he says it, like, such, like, come on, man, what do you think? Like, So they love the place, but then Norm comes in from the kitchen with a can of beer, like, you know, his off-color suit, and he tells her, he's like, this is the last cold beer, but we could split it if you'd like.
And he's walking in and he's popping the beer open, too. Yeah,
exactly.
That's one of the funniest parts of the whole thing.
Yeah, it's got that sound, like the Foley sound and everything, and just like, shh. kitchen. And he jotted down some notes about their place. He takes out just napkins, and he's like, are those cocktail napkins? He's like, yeah, do you need some? Sorry. And then Lilith offers them veggie pate, and Norm's like, yeah, I'm empty here. He just takes the tray and just starts devouring it while talking to them. And then they're like, yeah, we don't even know if we want to do this. And Norm kind of gets a sense that this isn't working, so he pulls Frasier aside. And this is like the scene that I really kind of like between them. And Frasier calls them narrow-minded, trend-sucking dilettantes. And he's like, you know, to them, all of their chefs must be French. All of their mechanics must be German. And he said, their designers must be stylish. And Norm kind of gets it. He's like, I mean... And he kind of puts his hand out. He's like, stylish, yeah. And Frasier's like, I don't know what to say. And Norm's like, well, I do. And he kind of walks over them. But instead of, you know, being apologetic and you know, deferring to them and kind of coming clean, he just says, did I tell you that last night I programmed myself to dream about your space? Cut to back at the bar, and Woody is this was another scene that was in the 200th episode, but slightly abbreviated. But Woody's like, he tells Rebecca that she's looking a little puny, that she's lost too much weight, and pretty soon she'll be wasting away, and only her ribs will be able to show. He's like, your ribs will start to showing like this guy back in Hanover, Carl Leffers. Of course, he'd been dead a while when they found him. And I forgot about that because that part is cut out of the 200th episode where I kind of heard that line so often. And she's like, did Sam tell you to say this? And he's like, no, I told myself. And she's like, and like by calling her so thin that she might be sick, she's like, that's the best compliment I've ever heard. And she gives him a kiss. And he's like, well, your hair's been looking a little ratty too. He's like, what, no kiss from that? So, oh, yeah, so she wants to weigh herself. Rebecca wants to weigh herself, but they took the scale out of her office because they've been using it to weigh or to measure Cliff's head for one more of his brain things.
He's weighing his brain, yeah.
So Rebecca steps on it, but sneaking up behind her, Sam just kind of puts his big toe on the scale behind her. And it goes off, and she's disgusted by the weight and everything, and he goes running off to the bathroom, and she chases him, and she's outside the door. She's like, get out of here, I know what you just did. And old Al comes out just straightening his belly, like, congratulations. It's like, oh. And then the Coopermans show up again, or for the first time at the bar, and Norm tries to hustle them to their corner before anyone notices. He's like, Dick and Della Tracy, how did you track me down? So they assume that Cheers is a gay bar, because that's where because that's where Norm is. And they're like, I don't know, maybe it's not a gay bar, but they're like, well, look at those two. And they see across the bar, Woody is like inspecting Cliff's head, like with his fingertips and everything, like he's measuring something. And they're going to order drinks from Carla, and he's like, no, I'll take care of this. And he says that he is a little sensitive since the operation. So I was like, okay, trans joke about Carla.
Yeah.
That one's a little bit rough. It could have been worse, but didn't need that one at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's not a good one, but again, like I was actually expecting, I was like, okay, where are they going to go? That could go worse. Anyway, they offer to pay him double to redecorate their mountain retreat, as they say it. But they also want to set him up with a friend of theirs, and he says that he's already been snapped up, and he points to Sam. And Robert recognizes Sam from the Sox. He's like, didn't he used to play for the Sox? And Norm's like, yes, but now he plays for me. And Norm brings Sam over. He's like, yeah, there's this couple, they're big fans of yours. They just want to meet you and say hi and everything like that. And he kind of whispers, he's like, by the way, we're lovers. And Sam instantly kind of clams up and freaks out and everything like that. And he's like almost tongue-tied and shocked as they're pretending that he and Norm are in a relationship. And finally, like after a couple seconds, Sam can't even pretend a lie about this and joke around with it. And he's like, what are you talking about? He's like, I love babes, babes, babes. And kind of walks off. He's like, if you know nothing else about me, this is the one thing you have to know about me. And just sort of like walks off. And again, it's like, okay, all right. But then Norm is like, babes is his pet name for linebackers, which is kind of a good joke. So they're like, what's going on? We know something's wrong. So then Norm is finally has to come clean and confess that he is straight. And they're like, impossible. He's like, no. I've known it from the time I was a little boy. He's known that he was straight. And he tells them, and it's this oddly progressive and open-minded speech, despite being about his heterosexuality.
Yeah.
Because you could just flip it. And he's basically like, because his whole thing, like, about how, like, look, I've known who I am since I was a little kid, and I can't pretend for you. I can't pretend that I'm something I'm not. And I think if you really look down in your heart, you'll like somebody for who they are, not who they do, or something like that. I forget exactly.
Yeah, how that's the exact line.
Yeah, but that's basically. He's basically like, you could say, like, it could be somebody's coming out speech and talking about how they're gay, but it's Norm. Mm-hmm. This is how he's straight, and he can't lie about being gay anymore just to get this job. But it's kind of like, yeah, from Norm, this is kind of like, this is really kind of nice and progressive. It's kind of a nice little speech.
That's where their whole reversal aspect of it works, because they lean into that and go for. Exactly, and that's what makes it funny and almost satirical, because they're making fun of, they're not making fun of anybody gay, they're making fun of these two pretentious Martha's Vineyard yuppies, right?
So, exactly.
and their tendency to stereotype, you know, so that's, yeah. and that I think drives it home in a way that is a little more nuanced than being like really direct about it.
Right, exactly. But at this point, they don't want him to redecorate their mountain retreat because he lied to them. They're like, we're people of principle, and you betrayed our trust. He's like, I could do it for half price. And the guy's like, here's the key. There's Perrier in the fridge. And he's like, if the neighbor asks, you're a plumber. So
doesn't he at one point in that whole speech, or I don't know if you're, I think it's to them, say like, I sleep next to my wife, but like it's yeah. next to Vera, but it's in the next room, yeah. or something
he's like
that.
Like, I sleep with Vera. I was like, well, next to Vera. It's like, actually in the room next to Vera, but I leave the door open. So, so then he has to kind of do a little bit of a walk of shame back to the bar where the gang is just staring at them, and he's like, what is it? Just out with it. And they're like, how could you keep a secret like this from us? And he's like, guys, I'm straight. You know, I've always been straight. And it's of all people, Cliffy's like, who cares about that? You can get stuff at wholesale.
And they start placing orders.
Yeah, they start placing orders. They ask for sofas. They ask for lamps. They ask for bark loungers. And Norma's like, you know, I should tell you, I'm not cheap. And Sam leans in really close, like, even for your lover. And Norm starts laughing, and that's how the ends. And I can't imagine this is the case, because, like, that's the ending punchline. But to me, the way that line, like, landed, like, almost to me felt like Sam, like, Ted Danson was ad-libbing that moment because of George Wendt's reaction.
Wendt's reaction.
The way he laughs yeah. about it. Like, I was like, was that an ad-lib? I was like, they couldn't have, like, they wouldn't ad-lib the punchline of the episode. That had to be scripted, but I don't know. That was pretty good. So
it feels ad-lib because it feels really natural the way he delivers the line. It does feel like right. It feels organic.
Yeah, and almost just like coming off of Sam's earlier response and how he wouldn't even joke, wouldn't even pretend to be gay, like how, like, horrific he almost thought, like, treated that idea, to then make a joke about it, I was like, that almost feels like more like a Ted Danson joke than a mm-hmm. Sam joke.
Yeah, because it could have ended on, well, I don't come cheap, you know, and...
Right.
And, you know, you go to credits, so...
Yeah.
You know, I'm gonna imagine that is an ad lib that was kept in because of the reaction it got.
Yeah, yeah. This is several episodes now that Sam has had to be somebody's beard in order to like keep him, like, whether it was Norm or Rebecca or something.
So. Yeah, I mean, I had a few notes about things you've already talked about, just to kind of circle back on a couple of things.
Yeah, please.
You mentioned the transphobic joke, but. There's moments where the fat jokes on Rebecca work and don't. And fat jokes toward women are like all over 80s sitcoms.
Yeah.
You know, Married with Children specialized in them in some ways. To a vulgar sort of degree.
Yeah.
You know, the moment of Lips Like Tiny Hits thing, that I groaned at that because I was like, oh, man. The line in the beginning actually worked. But I will say the stepping on the scale line scene worked only because Danson doesn't make it look like he's doing it. Because he's just standing behind her, so you have no reason to suspect that he's standing on that. Like, there's no expectation of that, and you hear the computer voice say it, and he starts laughing and runs, and her reaction is, like, Malone! You know,
It's also, knowing what the future held for Kirstie Alley and her weight and the fact that she'd starred in a show called Fat Actress and everything
Fat
like
Actress.
That. Like, what eventually happened, like... Yeah, it's just weird. It just has kind of like a weird little feeling about it.
I've always liked how, especially in these first few seasons with her, she is caustic toward him in a way that Shelley Long wasn't. And I think you said like right off the bat when you covered her first couple of episodes is they went for somebody completely different. And I've always thought that worked really, really well.
Yeah. Yeah, and she's so different, but also so brilliant. And as comedic foils, you know, they're very different types, but they still work in opposition to Sam both, because they bring out different aspects of each other and of him. And so good. Yeah,
it's better than Van Hagar.
Much very much so. Yeah, then for Norm's tab, Norm had 6 beers in this episode, which brings him up to 614 for the series. For the employee of the week, I entertained giving it to either Woody or Frasier because they both had moments that I really, really loved, but it was a Norm-centric episode, and Norm was also really, really good. Like, this is one of my favorite, if not my favorite, Norm-focused episodes. I had so much fun with this one. So yeah, I gave it to Norm.
I would too, but I do want to point out the absolutely brilliant chemistry between Kelsey Grammer and BB New Earth.
Oh yeah.
In that whole sequence in the apartment, because it had been a little while since I watched an episode with the two of them when the couple was in love.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm so used to, like, rewatching old episodes of Frasier where she would show up, or kind of last season or season and a half or so where they had, you know, divorced and everything. And it was way more just, you know, kind of being nasty to each other. This was great. And she's just, she bounces off of him really well, but it's not, it is the sort of like loving couple, but they're so witty together that, I wanted a little bit more of that, especially since they can't stand any of the pretentious people that they're that is their crowd. I mean, even she is just like, you know, that's the Y word or whatever. And so they're the runner up essentially for me, because I was blown away by it. I'd forgotten how good they were together.
Right. Yeah. So what was your home run, or what did you think was the best moment?
I love the combine thing. So, but
killer fudge brownies.
Mine is when he's doing it. It's one line when he's doing the rearranging of everything. He says, "This goes here. This goes here." And he says, "The chrome and glass that goes in the harbor." I lose it every time. That was like the whole reason I picked this episode. I remember that one line because it makes me laugh every single time. Because he just does it. It goes to the heart, and then he goes into the next thing. And it just like, yeah, it's just, it's so brilliant.
I love it. That's so good. For me, I forgot I mentioned it, but the whole killer fudge brownies thing is my best part. my runner up is that's how they got rid of their old paint. And then my other runner would be another Woody moment when he's telling Rebecca, he's like, pretty soon your ribs will start showing, like this guy back in Hanover, Carl Effords. Of course, he'd been dead a while when they found him. I'm just like, for those to be Woody's only real moments in this episode, so good.
Oh man, oh. Woody Boyd and Rose Nyland, that would be a conversation. The other one I like, and it's such an obvious dumb joke because it's in the C plot of the thing. When Carla starts the SAT question about the left side of Cliff's brain and the right side of Cliff's brain leaving train stations in New York and LA, Woody's like, hold on, let me get a pencil. Again, it's a dumb, obvious joke, but it's just because these are the actors doing it, it absolutely kills.
And it's the joke where you don't need the joke is basically just the setup and then you cut away.
Yeah, you don't need the end of it.
Right. So, oh yeah, just a funny episode, a funny little one-off, and yeah. Again, this is a fun season where we get a lot of episodes like this. There's not really status quo changing or world building in this season. There's just a lot of simple, mm-hmm. funny stuff. So
yeah, one thing I noticed too, and I really credit the creators for doing this, is that this is around the time the show was huge, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was huge when Shelley Long was there in the last few seasons, and it just got bigger and bigger and bigger, yep. until it. I mean, because it outlasted Cosby like a season or two.
Yep.
Because when Cosby left, Cosby was really on the downturn. Cheers really left on the highest it could have left. But this is around the time where it's like they have to give everybody something to do or a joke. Because like Sam doesn't necessarily – Sam needs to be in the episode for the one bit. But Rebecca does not need to be in this episode. But they need to give them all something to do. And this doesn't work in every sitcom. Like – Seinfeld was notorious toward the back end of its run for you're watching an episode, Jerry's got something to do with Lane and George, and they're usually tied, but they've got to give something for Kramer to do, so it's usually some sort of weird hijinks with Newman. You're like, nothing adds up in this episode.
Right.
And the times in the last few seasons of Seinfeld when everything did add up, it's a tighter episode and they're better, like the Soup Nazi, for instance.
Yeah.
Here – they keep all of the extra everybody's got a moment stuff to the bar, and it's very, very quick, and it snaps, and it doesn't take away from the it doesn't take a lot of time away from the actual plot of the episode. And I think it's a textbook example of how to do that when you have an ensemble cast who are all becoming big because of the show or being noticed because of the show.
Yeah.
And so they all need their moments, and I think it was really I think that was a really, really great thing. And I mean, people kind of take television directors for granted because you don't know very many of them, but man, James Burrows, there's got to be a Hall of Fame for these types of people, and he's on the Mount Rushmore of sitcom directors. I mean, the man knows how to direct an episode.
He's the Washington. Yeah.
Oh, he is. It's just he's just so. So good.
Yeah. And to get to your other part, like a part, it's also an amount of trust in the audience and in the ensemble. Like the fact, like, I mean, you're right, like Ted Danson and Rebecca or Kirstie Alley are the stars. They are the male and female lead. Ostensibly, yeah. They're the ones you're tuning in to see. They've got three short scenes kind of shunted off to the B or C plots, like probably in 2 minutes of screen time, you know, something pretty simple. It's a Norm-centric episode, but Frasier has more in this episode than Sam and Rebecca. And
yeah, no pun intended. Sam's the straight man in the jokes in some of these scenes,
yeah,
right?
Really,
especially with Norm, and he is the straight man in that scene.
Right,
Norm
right.
with the lovers thing, but that's the bit.
Right.
So yeah.
But that's the brilliance of the show and some of these mm-hmm. characters, and some of them hold up. Some of them have, you know, when you get into the other characters, some of them have, you know, stronger showings than others. Like Frasier centric episodes were always really, really good. Woody centric mm-hmm. episodes were always really, really good. Norm, it was about 50-50. Or maybe a little bit better than that. Norm usually had good episodes, but in the first couple of years, not all of them. Cliffy, it took a little while for Cliff-centered episodes to really kind of crack. And Carla, unfortunately, the episodes that put her front and center, you know, if it's not about Nick, a lot of them weren't as good, but some of them, we'll see some.
I remember Eddie's funeral is a really funny episode.
So hold on to that thought. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Tom, thank you very much for coming back on the show, and always love talking
to you.
Where else can our listeners hear you if they want to hear more from you?
Yeah, I have two podcasts over at the Two True Freaks Network. One is Pop Culture Affidavit, which is everything random in popular culture, and the other one is Required Reading with Tom and Stella, which is Stella and I taking a look at one book a month and just critiquing it and reviewing it and talking about whether or not we will think it's required reading. So check those out. They're both at twotruefreaks.com.
Very cool, very cool. Check those out, everybody. Thanks again, Tom, and thanks to all of you who listen to Cheerscast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. Cheerscast is supported by the Right On Podcast Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of the Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FWPodcasts to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and until next time, we're closed.
Maybe we should let him go.
If that's your final decision, my cherub, I concur.
The heave-ho.
Wait. At the risk of sounding sexist, I do believe this is man's work. It requires a firm hand. Please feel free to leave the room if you must. This could get unpleasant. Sir? You're too good for us.